another reason why I created We Are Black Journalists. It was not necessarily focusing on the stats, because when we gather together, it was so much bigger than that. And over the years, I'm connecting with several black journalists from several different departments, from science, tech, fashion, sport, current affairs, politics. And it's the emphasis that we are not a monolith. So an important thing for every news organization to do is to make it a duty and an effort to educate themselves about the amazing presence of black journalists. And you shouldn't really have to look narrow or far to find some, because there are many of us, and it's just important that we're given that platform to further enhance that credibility that we already have.
Today's guest is Hannah Hajala, international journalist and presenter, currently specializing in podcasts for organizations like the BBC, CBC, and she's the founder of the Black Journals. Welcome, Hannah. It's a pleasure to have you here today on When Power Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be in this conversation.
I am super excited to have you here with us today, and we are going to have a conversation about diversity, inclusion, and representation in media. We're going to explore your story through your journey as a founder of Black Journals and the necessity of making media more diverse and inclusive. To do that, let's start from the very beginning. How did you get into journalism, and which were the first steps you take?
Yeah, I would definitely say the journey of journalism was one that started with the motivation of my English teacher, who spoke about how she just loved the way that I expressed myself in classes, in homework. She always said, "Hannah, I really see you being a journalist." And obviously at the age of 15, I'm not going to start applying for jobs. I went straight to Wikipedia and I looked at what a journalist does. And I saw that it was someone that basically reports on stories of interest, travels for stories, sheds light on certain issues, and informs a range of different audiences about that. And I thought that was very cool, very fascinating. And I decided to follow through with that. And wouldn't say I was more proactive until university, where I created my own blog, I created my own platform, and I guess just really embraced that journey into journalism.
Do you remember the first story that you have covered?
Yeah, so it was by a magazine called Yuppie Mag. And I just remember coming across it because I was very proactive on Twitter. So I decided to connect with quite a few publishers and editors. And I connected with a guy called Ricky, I think that was his name, who looked after Yuppie magazine. And he got back in touch with me and said, "Look, if there's an article you'd want to write, we can post it on our site. We get this 1,000 number of listeners and stuff." And I thought, wow, like I was just, my mind was just blown by how you can create a story and it could end up somewhere. And lots of people can end up coming across it, clicking on it or reading it. So it was on the Sunday Times cover, and it was like a montage of Rihanna, the musician and businesswoman, and the late Princess Diana, and their faces were meshed together. And it was basically talking about, you know, is Rihanna our modern day queen? And I wrote about how stereotypes are constantly changing, and the pleasant surprise of the Sunday Times to write such a piece on that. So yeah, I was really happy with the responses I got from that, sharing it. It was filled with some typos here and there, but I guess it was just that initial journey of writing something for the first time. And that was like a little nugget. It was like a little reminder of, yeah, this is definitely something that you should be doing more of.
I think that the thing you remember the most about the first story you cover is not just the topic itself, it's the sensation that comes with it. Your name is out there, your story is published, and everything becomes surreal. In your opinion, and according to your experience, Hannah, what makes a good story?
A story that leaves the audience walking away with a different takeaway. You know, something that will really make them think, question, be surprised, feel informed, feel enriched, and you know, just more full of knowledge. And that could be anything. I was listening to a true crime podcast yesterday, and one of the interviewees was someone that I would describe as absolutely deranged and unhinged. And even though it wasn't the most positive thing that I learned, I still went away having learned something new about people. And I think that's a really important part of storytelling. Whether they disagree or not, you've taught them something new and you've given them a different perspective. So never be afraid to really go that extra mile and take yourself out of the production mode when it comes to a story. Like, literally put yourself in the shoes of the consumer, the listener, the viewer, the reader, the person who you essentially want to reach out to.
I couldn't agree more, actually. What you just said truly resonates with me. I think that it's really important to let the story live once we close the newspaper or switch off the TV. And it's important when a story makes you reflect, gives you a takeaway, and maybe you even get interested in topics that you didn't think about it before. Journalism requires a lot of courage. And when you are a young journalist and you start to reach out to editors and to pitch your stories and articles, it can be quite daunting, the whole experience, especially if you don't have the right connection and you are just starting. So do you have any tips or any advice that you would like to share with the audience that is following us today?
Yeah, I would definitely say when it comes to pitching, they are there. They are literally there to listen. They're there to receive. They're there to understand and learn. But what are you bringing to the table? I know that may sound a little bit cliche to some listening, but when someone Googles your name, do they have a clear understanding of what it is that you do, what your interests are? Like, do they have a clear understanding of the work that you like to report on? Because the moment you network, the moment you reach out to someone with an idea, they're naturally going to search a bit about you, just to sort of see a little bit of your background. And I'm not saying that determines, well, the validity of the pitch, but your branding and what you represent can really help you to get into certain doors. And believe it or not, you don't need to work for a massive organization to enhance or strengthen your branding. It starts with you. It starts with the blog that you choose to create, the things that you post on Instagram, the things that you post on Twitter, the podcast that you may present on. These can be many different types of work. Obviously, some will take a little bit more time than others, but you can literally create a platform for yourself that can contribute very widely to your brand. So I would say they are there, the editors are there, many of them are very active on Twitter, always happy to respond to a DM or have a coffee or chat. But depending on what you're asking, I think if you're asking for a general chit chat, DM away, no problem. But if you're asking on something particularly work related and you're asking them to contribute time and money into your craft, then let them know that it's worth it without you even having to prove yourself. From the moment they Google your name, they should have an understanding of what you're about. And how you present that is solely down to you.
Branding is the key, right? This is truly important. When you look back at your career, were there any challenges or obstacles that you had to face, and how did you overcome them? How have they shaped the woman and the journalist that you are today?
Yeah, I would definitely say it was probably just what led me to launch We Are Black Journos in 2018. And it was realizing that the media landscape, especially British journalism, is not designed for people who look like myself. And with that, it means that it can create a lot of isolating feelings. It can create a lot of, just not feeling very well supported, not knowing who to turn to, not knowing how to navigate, the slight paranoia that comes with, is it because of it being my race? So in the midst of that, I decided to create We Are Black Journos, which was a way of celebrating and connecting those who are from a Black background and are working in media. And that really helped me to overcome these challenges, because I was able to create a platform and a safe space that connects many people who may have experienced some similar things to me, not all, because Black journalists are not a monolith. But it was just a really great way just to build that togetherness amongst each other.
If you are enjoying this conversation, make sure you follow us on all social media platforms at WomenPowerUK and you subscribe to our podcast channel on Spotify and YouTube. How important is representation, not only in the newsroom, but also in the news that we put out there?
I would say it's incredibly important because it goes back to one of my favorite sayings that media can't reflect society if society is not reflected in the media. Journalism does not have a face. I think in the construct of Britain systemically, massive organizations like the British Broadcasting Organization was founded by an old rich white man. And for decades, that is literally what the workforce looked like until we got the first Black newsreader and the first Asian sports reader and so forth. It's incredibly important because as time is advancing and changing, and as conversations about race and discrimination are becoming more apparent, it's a normal part of language and society. And if the ideas of diversity and inclusion is a normal part of language, then that should also be a normal part of lifestyle. You should look around a newsroom and feel as though you could look on the street and not spot any difference. Because when you're looking at any typical street in most parts of London, you will see diversity. And it's just those constant reminders that journalism and media does not, it should not have an ethnicity, a face, an age. It should talk to all audiences.
100%, I totally agree with you. And if we would like to add to the equation gender equality and representation of women, where are we now and what can we do to improve?
I would say it's a slow journey. It's definitely a slow journey of growth, of understanding. And, you know, when I started We Are Black Journals, we were very much so into the 0.4%, and now it's above 1%. And it's slow, but I think that's another reason why I created We Are Black Journals. It was not necessarily focusing on the stats, because when we gather together, it was so much bigger than that. And over the years, I'm connecting with several Black journalists from several different departments, from science, tech, fashion, sport, current affairs, politics. And it's the emphasis that we are not a monolith. So an important thing for every news organization to do is to make it a duty and an effort to educate themselves about the amazing presence of Black journalists. And you shouldn't really have to look narrow or far to find some, because there are many of us, and it's just important that we're given that platform to further enhance that credibility that we already have.
So when I'm thinking about diversity and inclusion, two words come to my mind, especially when we refer to junior journalists, and it's mentorship and sponsorship. What's your experience and your take on this?
Yeah, I'm very grateful to have been mentored from about the age of 17, because Claudia Lisa van der Poy, amazing Channel 5 journalist, was just so approachable, so easy to talk to, so helpful, and really, really pushed for me to get into certain spaces that I hadn't even heard about. I would say, and I saw an interesting post the other day about sponsorship over mentorship. I think anyone can receive mentoring at any point. You could ask someone for a coffee, or you could set up bi-monthly meetings. That in itself is a form of mentoring. But sponsorship goes a step ahead. Sponsorship is the idea of putting you and your name in rooms that you're not even in. It's putting money where your mouth is. It's supporting you financially as you're going towards your dreams. I do think mentorship has many benefits, and it's a very approachable way. And naturally, as people's schedules are getting more busy, maybe not everyone has the time to be a mentor, but to be a sponsor, I believe, has more longevity. So I would definitely say to anyone wanting to enhance their career prospects in that department, they should look at two, not just one.
So, and so what about allyship?
Incredibly important. I think it's that education that we need to fill ourselves with first. The fact that to be an ally means that you recognize that you're from a privileged group, and you also recognize the differences and the experiences are faced by those from a marginalized group, and you want to help. And you can do that in so many ways, so many ways. You could send check-in emails, you could push for certain events and initiatives, you could look at funding models, and you'd be surprised. It all starts with a simple conversation with these Black-led organizations, and you will really understand the power of allyship and listening and active listening too.
These are all very, very good points to reflect on. Thank you, Hannah, for sharing all of them with us. And I hope we inspired all our followers to not hesitate and reach out, ask for help, look for connection. Journalists can be a truly challenging career, and to make it on your own sometimes is not the solution, and it's never easy. We're moving towards the end of this conversation, Anna, so I have a few last questions to ask you. One is, what is one thing, and I know this is, you know, is a bit of a broader question, what is one thing that you would like to change about the media industry?
It's a very broad question. I would just say to think very carefully about the human versus media aspect. Journalists are human beings and, you know, deserve to have their own voice heard. I know that there's impartiality and etc., but it's really important that the media shows stronger appreciation for its talent. It's really important that the media understands the weight and the power that it has to influence. So if you do have someone who's speaking in a very biased, disrespectful way, it is the media's responsibility to clear that off, regardless of the status of the person at hand. Yeah.
And one last question before I let you go, and it's what are you most hopeful about for the future of journalism, and especially the future of Black journalists?
Yeah, I would say I'm hopeful about the stories that are going to come out. I think, yeah, just journalism and media is just such an exciting place to be right now. Like, there's so much content out there. There's so much exploration, and there's so much to learn and soak up and immerse ourselves in. So I really look forward to just a plethora of stories. And as for Black journalists, I look forward to seeing us be in every type of space. We're no longer taking seats at the table. We are occupying the entire table, and there's no limit to which we can't reach. There is no glass ceiling. I say that with a lot of optimism, but at the same time, I've seen many examples of people in places that I never thought would be there due to the systems of the world that we live in. But yeah, we're doing good.
Well, Hannah, thank you very much for being with us today. This was truly inspiring, and thank you again for letting us discover more about your journey and your story.
Thank you so much, Ladia.